Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Whether you're looking to start a career with no student loans or change careers to land one of the happiest jobs in the world, yep, that's construction, Build Mississippi can help. Visit buildmississippi.com to learn why a career in the trades deserves another look. buildmississippi.com. Your future is waiting.
Welcome in. What's up, everybody, on this Sunday night? This is the Rebel Report. My name is Michael Borky. Appreciate you being here. We got a lot to get to tonight and only a little bit of time to do it. Ole Miss had a record weekend in the NFL draft, a school record number of draft picks. Also, as you guys know, the UDFAs are popping up all over the place. There is one in particular that I did not understand. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. And then baseball, they get a series win. I thought the first two games of this series, they made an incredible statement. And then I don't know what the hell happened today. I really have no idea what that was all about. So we'll talk about that. Read your comments and more on this edition of the show. Again, my name is Michael Borky. Appreciate you being here. Subscribe if you have not already, both right here if you're watching or listening over on Super Talk's YouTube. Do not forget to subscribe. And also leave a like and a comment as well. And wherever you get your podcast, just search Rebel Report and subscribe and leave a rating and a review. And this edition of the show is brought to you in part by Toyota of Brookhaven. They're on exit 40 in Brookhaven. They also, by the way, have a service department. So if you live in the area, they're open Monday through Friday, 7 a.m., 7 p.m. You don't need to drive a Toyota. They'll take care of any make or model. So outstanding service department there. One of the highest rated in the state. But also, you have an online inventory that's just great. Check it out, toyotabrookhaven.com, because you know the car buying experience is a difficult one. And you want to know what you're getting into before you get in the car and go. But trust me, getting in the car and going is worth it. So even if you don't live in Brookhaven, you'll go to a place that will take care of you like a person and not just dollar signs. And also, $1,000 off on me, any in-stock new Toyota. Just tell them that I sent you. So Toyota Brookhaven, exit 40 in Brookhaven. They will deliver. I promise you that. So Ole Miss, as we talked about at the first round, or anywhere after the first round, Walter Nolan goes 16. Jackson Dart goes 25 to the Giants. And then there's been six more after that. Six more Ole Miss players have been drafted after that. It started on day two in the second round. Trey Harris off to the L.A. Chargers. Justin Herbert needed weapons. I mean, the only thing with Trey Harris is health, right? You guys know this. You've watched him play. When healthy, he is dominant. When healthy, or if there were no health concerns, I think that he would have been a first-round pick. I mean, the physical tools are just off the charts. Catches the ball in traffic, wins one-on-ones, smart guy, that kind of stuff. And he fell to the second round, I think, almost exclusively because of the injury history. But he's got a great quarterback and a really good coach. Now, I know that L.A. kind of – or maybe I don't know this. It just kind of feels like they want to build their brand around running the football. But give Herbert some weapons. Let him cook. And Trey Harris is certainly that. Trey Amos goes to 61, which is a little bit of a fall for what some people had him projected at. Some people even had him slipping into the late first round. The Bills, a lot of Bills writers thought that he'd be a good spot for them at 30. They went ahead and got Harrison from Kentucky, and there's some stuff with him. So I'm honestly surprised. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I love the spot. This is my favorite spot, I think, in the draft for any Ole Miss player, is Trey Amos to the Commanders, because not only does he get in the ground floor on what I think is going to be a franchise, or at least a team anyway. I don't know if the franchise is recoverable. New ownership, we'll see. But a good football team, defensive-minded head coach, I think he's going to flourish there. That is a really, really good landing spot for him, even though, again, he fell a little bit. But, man, I think that Washington is a really, really good place for him. Princely goes in the third round, pick 77 to the Carolina Panthers. There's going to be a chance for early playing time for him. I still maintain, and a lot of you do as well, that if Princely is healthy for the LSU game, Ole Miss doesn't lose that game. But anyway, Fourth round, Jordan Watkins goes to San Francisco. Another really good landing spot for him. Jordan Watkins is one of those guys, by the way, that just quietly improved every season at Ole Miss, played through some injuries himself, but he tested really well. So he's undersized, as you guys know. He doesn't have the prototypical size for an NFL wide receiver. But, man, he tested well, and he ran well. And I think that the draft process is what led to him getting picked in the fourth round. You have Poupon in the fifth round, and that is one that I'm sure we're going to talk about here in a little bit. He goes to L.A. in the fifth round, pick 172. In hindsight, and you know, everybody makes better decisions with the benefit of hindsight. Him returning to school would have probably made more financial sense for him, I think. I think he could have commanded more money than he'll get on his rookie deal in the fifth round. I mean, sometimes you get advice. Sometimes NFL people tell you one thing and it just doesn't happen. The draft is a bit of a crapshoot. And maybe he was just ready to start his NFL career. The Rams are a really well-coached football team and a good organization. I think he's going to stick there for sure. But there is a conversation to be had about, you know, financially, at least this year, he would have made more money, I think, in college. J.J. Pegues goes in the sixth round, just happy for him. I'm just an All-American type dude. And even though he's a sixth-round pick, I would not be at all surprised if he makes that roster. I mean, fully makes that roster and not just practice squad, even though he's a sixth-round pick. And I'm just happy for him because guys like him deserve success. And so I was happy to see that he got drafted. He deserved that day for sure. Just a really good community person on top of being a good football player. That's it. So I say that's it. That's eight. Eight Ole Miss players got drafted. I see a comment about it, so we'll get to the bad side of having that number of players get picked. But it was a good weekend for Ole Miss. It just continues to show the stability that Lane Kiffin has brought to Ole Miss, even though in 24 they came up short of expectations. But them having the number of picks in the same conversation as the programs that they did is a sign that they are continuing to elevate themselves, no doubt about it. And also you got to like the development, right? I mean, every single player – how about this stat of the day for you? Every single player that Ole Miss had drafted transferred to Ole Miss. All eight of them were transfers. Nolan from A&M, Dart from USC, Harris from Louisiana Tech, Amos from Alabama, Princely from Florida, Watkins from Louisville, Paul from Arkansas, Pegues from Auburn. All eight were transfers. So not only is Ole Miss having success, you know, 39 wins in 4 years, all the stuff you guys already know, but now they're taking in those transfers and turning them into NFL players. That's a good selling point for this. As long as the portal is going to be open, as long as it's going to be a thing and Ole Miss is going to use it, all eight of their draft picks are transfer players. How about that? Then there's a few UDFAs. Brandon Turnage is off to the Chiefs. This is one that surprised me. I am really surprised that Jared Ivey could not get drafted. I know what his testing score was. I know that it wasn't particularly great. I know that he doesn't have any elite skills, but man, I don't know how you can watch at his size the production that he had in the best league in college football and let a Raz score prevent you from drafting him at all. I was surprised by that. I think he's going to stick around. I don't know if he's going to have like a 20-year career in the NFL or anything, but I think that Jared Ivey, when you get him away from the tests and get him on the football field and then get him in the locker room, that is somebody that's going to go from UDFA to making a roster. And again, I don't care about the RAS score. I saw him produce in the best league in America consistently. And I know that there's more to it than that, as evidenced by, you know, the decades of drafting in the NFL. Great college players don't always make great pros. Bad college players sometimes make good pros. It does happen. But, man, I was surprised that Jared Ivey did not find his way into a draft pick at all. But I'm rooting for him. Nate Kolepo is off to Tampa Bay as a UDFA. Trey Washington is off to Indianapolis as a UDFA. Caden Davis, why not, is going to go to the Jets. Kickers have, like, the hardest time at making teams, especially if a team has an established one, but we'll see. Jerquan Scott is off to Buffalo. Isaiah Hamilton is off to Seattle. Again, all these are UDFA deals. Juice Wells is off to the Giants. That's another situation in which if there was an opportunity for him to return to school, he should have, if that opportunity presented itself. But anyway, he is off to the Giants. John Saunders is off to Miami. Ulysses Bentley also off to Indianapolis, by the way. Caden Prescorn is headed to Detroit. So those are all of your UDFAs as of this recording at 8:10 on Sunday night. So there you go. A good weekend for Ole Miss. We'll talk about what you guys had to say in the comments here coming up in just a second. Baseball weekend. So Ole Miss wins the series. They had to win the series if they wanted to get back on the right side of hosting, and they did that. I was incredibly impressed with how they played in the first two games of this series. Hunter Elliott still had those command issues, you know, still – I mean, five walks, so he had to display some toughness, but only giving up one run in five innings and handing the ball over to Morris, who did not have his best weekend, by the way. But that was good enough from Elliott for sure. Again, he had to battle through some command issues, but only gave up one run on two hits and five complete. And that set the tone, and Ole Miss was able to win the game. They had 11 hits, scored eight runs. Three guys hit a home run. I mean, it was just basically a perfect night for Ole Miss on Friday night. And then the same thing Saturday as well. I mean, they just kind of dominate Vanderbilt 7-1. The story, of course, being Riley Maddux getting into the seventh. That's something that we talked about going into the series is Ole Miss pitchers need to extend their outings. They need to get deeper into the ballgame. You have issues on the back end of your bullpen. What is the best way to alleviate the issues of a weak bullpen? Your starters going deep into games. And Riley Maddux has been, has really stepped up after really struggling for a while. I mean, I guess it really started with his outing at Kentucky. But, man, he was good against Tennessee, and he was exceptional, again, against Vanderbilt. Seven complete, one run, scattered four hits, struck out five. And again, set the tone for what ended up being a comfortable win. I know it got kind of weird, kind of late. Just a hair weird. When you're up 7-1, it's not too weird. But Connor Spencer came in and slammed the door after Braden Jones kind of, you know, it was a little, whatever, doesn't matter. But Riley Maddux has really stepped up and delivered some quality performances against really good teams. That's a top 10 Vanderbilt team. That came in, and that was really good stuff. If you get more of that from Maddux, then this team can go really far if he keeps that up, especially if they hit the baseball the way that they did the first two games. So they get done with game two. I put it on Twitter, like Ole Miss made a big statement this weekend, and I still think that they did. They were really sharp for those two games. How concerned should you be about the third game? Because what the hell was that today? What on earth was that today? That looked like an Ole Miss team that like went to the Grace Potter concert and then spent the rest of the night closing down the library. I mean, just totally non-competitive at the plate, completely non-competitive at the plate. Nichols had nothing, and I don't think he should have gone as deep into the game as Bianco and Mangrum let him get in, but he only threw one complete. They did let him pitch the second. Gave up five earned runs on five hits. Again, he only recorded three outs and walked a couple as well. Hooks was good, though. Hooks gave up no runs on three complete, struck out a couple, but it was an awful day for Ole Miss. They had a pair of errors as well, only three hits. The approaches at the plate were just god-awful for Ole Miss. They let Vanderbilt's Sunday starter throw a seven-inning complete game, again, with only those three hits, and they struck out 12 times. So the bats and the approach at the plate, I mean, was just brutal today. They weren't seeing anything. And so all in all, it's, you know, a big series win, played really well for two games. I you know, because they won those two games, you can look at a third game as you just kind of dismiss it and tip your hat and move on. But man, this team can slip into some bad habits at the plate. They are really good offensively, and they've shown you that. But man, sometimes it can look really ugly, and I'm not smart enough to know what it is. I don't know if it's just as simple as a pitcher has their number. I don't know. But I do know that that they looked uncompetitive today, and anybody looks uncompetitive when they're not hitting the baseball. But the focus and energy felt different in the third game of this series. What does it mean? I don't know. But when the regional projections come out, they're going to be back on the right side of hosting. And you know what this team at its ceiling is. And this team at its ceiling is capable and good enough to win a regional and a super regional. That is what this team's ceiling is. They proved it this weekend. Totally bounced back from that debacle that was last week. And you just hope today was a hangover day and they continue to play high-level baseball, because they were really impressive for two games. Now they hit the road and go to Norman. That is going to be a difficult series. And then Mississippi State lost yet again. I know they get jacked up for when Ole Miss is in town, but you could have a pretty bad environment for them anyway, because they usually have really good ones that weekend, because they're kind of out. Again, I know Ole Miss kind of changes things, but they are ready to move on there at Mississippi State. So a couple of interesting road series coming up for Ole Miss, but again, they got the series win. They are back on the right side of the hosting conversation for sure. Now, I mean, if they keep playing well, they could have they could play themselves back into the national seed conversation. We shall see. Podcast is brought to you in part by Advantage Business Systems. Check them out online at absms.com. Advantage Business Systems has you covered for all of your Mississippi office technology needs. So if you're a company in Mississippi and you need tech in the office, copiers and printers and mail machines, anything in between that, and cloud storage, they've got you covered. Tell them I sent you. Get a complimentary office technology assessment. So you just tell them what you need, what your budget is. They'll perform an assessment on me at absms.com. And the podcast is also brought to you by Priority One Bank. They make you their priority like they do me. I had to go to my Priority One Bank location this week. I had some weird activity on my account. It was as seamless and quick of a process as possible, because again, Priority One Bank makes you their priority. They got 16 locations here in Mississippi, so there's likely to be one in your backyard. And again, bank with me at Priority One Bank. Here we go to the comments. Bianco getting tossed today was the dumbest thing I've seen in a while. That umpire was a coward, by the way. I can't stand that stuff. Coach comes out, and Bianco's right, by the way, in what he was arguing, that they were getting quick pitched. And he comes out to argue with the umpire. The argument's over. Bianco is walking back to the dugout when the umpire tosses him when his back is turned to him. And then, I mean, like, essentially runs away from Bianco. That whole thing was a joke. And then the umpire turned around and telling Vanderbilt to slow down. The whole thing was a joke. That's just absolutely a joke. It really is. So, I think Chris Paul should have come back in hindsight. Yeah, probably so. He would have gotten a fully guaranteed, very expensive contract. He was offered a fully guaranteed, very expensive contract to return to Ole Miss, and chose to go to the NFL. And you hope it works out for him. But I do think that, yeah, there would have been more money this year for him than he'll make with the Rams. All these draft picks, and we go to the Gator Bowl. Yeah, so that is part of this conversation for sure. So Ole Miss was fifth in draft picks with 8. Here, I'll actually give you the draft picks by school. Sorry. So Ohio. So here's a pretty telling thing, though. This is the difference between a national championship team and a playoff contending team. Ohio State had 14 players drafted. Georgia had 13. Texas 12. Oregon 10. Again, Ole Miss 5th with 8. Behind Ole Miss at 7 was Alabama, Florida, LSU, and Michigan. And with 6, it was Maryland and Notre Dame. But, yeah, look, 8 draft picks is a lot. Ole Miss should have made the playoff. We've talked about that many times before. I think that this season's failure lies directly at the feet of Lane Kiffin. We've talked about that because it was the offense that was the problem. One second half touchdown in their three losses. They lost to this bad Kentucky team at home, all that stuff. But it's not like Ole Miss had the best roster in college football either. So, yes, they had 8 draft picks, but, I mean, Ohio State had 6 more than they did. Georgia had 5 more than they did, and they beat Georgia badly. But also, defensively, they were absolutely as good as advertised. It's not like the entire season was a complete and total flop. They were good enough, especially defensively, though. I mean, all the hype around that team, one half of that team matched that hype and met the expectations and performed probably above them. They were the most productive defensive front six in college football. They played good enough defense to win every single game. It was just the other side of the ball that was a failure. But when you look at these 8 draft picks, there's 2 positions missing. Offensive line and running back. What were the 2 biggest weaknesses for this team? Offensive line and running back. It was a very good roster. They should have made the playoff, but you see where they were flawed in what the NFL told them. That they weren't good enough in those 2 areas, and that cost them. That absolutely cost them. You're making a joke with someone that if they could get 9 draft picks to match their number of regular season wins, yeah. Terrible umpires today, but today was awful. Couldn't see the ball at all. Yeah. Surprised Amos fell as far as he did. I am too, but man, what a good spot though. Yeah, regardless, he got a good spot. Absolutely. Absolutely. Dart had the worst O-line, the worst running back, and his number one receiver out most games, and Dart still made things happen. This is what I would tell any Giants fan that's not happy with the Dart pick. Well, I mean, sometimes NFL fans are just going to be mad to be mad. That's just how they operate. And of course, the media created this thing with Shedeur Sanders that he was just some elite prospect, and he's not. I don't think Jackson is a plug-and-play starter, which is great because Russell Wilson's there and Jameis is there. But I do think with time and Daboll's coaching, he can become a starter and spend a long time in the NFL. I think especially what you saw, by the way, you saw a lot of what NFL teams look for in quarterbacks. And no, it's not an exact science, but go watch the video of Jackson getting the phone call from the Giants, by the way. And pay close attention to what the Giants people that talked to him said about him. They like him as a player. Like, look, I mean, he's 6'2", he can move, he's physical, he's all that stuff. But what created the first round pick for Jackson Dart in particular was they talked about process. Right? We loved the way you approached the process. We loved your leadership abilities, those kind of things. There is more to playing quarterback than just throwing a football. Like, there's so much more to it than that. And again, it's not an exact science. There's been a lot of great guys with physical tools and good leaders that never made it and stuff like that. And then you got guys like Deshaun Watson that found a way to make it, and they're pieces of crap, right? So it happens. But what got Jackson drafted in the first round was that stuff. What got Tyler Shuck drafted 40 by the Saints was, look, he's big. Like, he's 6'6". Like, he can move a little bit as well. He's got some really impressive tape. He's got some brain farts too, but he's got some really impressive tape. But what they really liked about him was when they got him in a meeting and they got him on a board in the process, in preparation. Tom Brady has never had the strongest arm in the NFL, and he was never the best athlete. As you guys have seen him run the 40, right? What made Tom Brady great? Process, right? So all of this discussion about quarterbacks that you've seen, all this disingenuous garbage that you've seen regurgitated by people that are either not smart enough to understand or are driving disingenuous agendas, are they're missing that part of it. It's process. It's preparation. It's being obsessed with the game, that kind of stuff. That's why Tom Brady was great. That's why Drew Brees was great. Obsession, process, details. And apparently Jackson just hit it completely out of the park with that side of the game. And that's why he's a supreme athlete, right? But when it comes to throwing the football, there's issues. There's accuracy issues with him. But nailed the process, right? Cam Ward, my gosh, the number one overall pick. Nobody talked about Cam Ward. Doesn't even have an agent, by the way. Doesn't have an agent. Nailed the process. When they sat down with him and talked about preparation, he nailed it. He's obsessed with football. And they trust that when it comes to being a guy that can lead a team and be prepared for everything, that he can do it. So, yes, quarterback is difficult for sure. There is some truth to what Mel Kiper said about how the NFL has struggled to evaluate quarterbacks because it's an extremely difficult position to get right. But the pretending that NFL teams were not extremely sound in reasoning for why Cam Ward went number one, which, again, nobody talked about that, by the way, or why Jackson Dart went in the first round, or why Tyler Shuck went first, or why Milroe went before Sanders, or why Dylan Gabriel went before Sanders, because they believe that those guys will do more than just show up on game day and throw a football. So go watch the Giants calls with Jackson again. You'll see why I just kind of ranted the way I did, because that's what they pointed out about what they loved about him. So don't understand how Ivy goes the entire draft without being drafted myself, me either. How about all this quarterback drama? This is a loaded question, so I'll break it up in sections. Thoughts on the quarterbacks drafted other than Dart and then Shador Sanders in the prank call situation. Okay. So quarterbacks drafted other than Dart. Frankly, the more I read about Cam Ward, the more I like him. The more I see videos and stuff of him talking, the more I like him. Tennessee's just in bad shape, and I don't know if he's not ready to be day one starter, but he's just been basically ignored in this draft, and it's kind of nuts because I do like him. Just talked about Dart a lot. It's all about process with him, and good spot. The only concern about New York is if they don't win enough this year to keep Daboll's job. But I like that he's not going to get thrust into a starting role that he may not be ready for. He gets to learn behind Russell Wilson, a Super Bowl winner, and Jameis, by the way, who I think is really going to be helpful to Jackson as well, and I'm not being sarcastic. Shuck to the Saints. Saints fans hate it because, my God, no, Saints Twitter hates it. And I know that the organization has been an absolute dumpster fire, right? It's been an absolute dumpster fire. So I get why there's frustration. But you're going to turn around and watch Kellen Moore win a Super Bowl and work miracles on Jalen Hurts the way he did. I'm being a little hyperbolic there. But you're going to watch that and then turn around and think that, no, the Saints suck because they drafted this guy as opposed to Shador Sanders. Like that segment of Saints fans just bought into this Sanders thing like everybody else did and think that that guy, a pretty good quarterback now, like he's good. He's not elite like some people tried to sell you, but he's good with obvious maturity issues, like major red flag, obvious issues with maturity and focus and attention to detail. That was obvious the whole time. If anybody was paying attention to college football, they knew that, hey, this kid's talented, but also he's got maturity issues. Getting in the face and yelling and cussing at the Texas Tech ball boy. Throwing his offensive line under the bus. Not taking meetings seriously with NFL teams. He's not mature. He needs to grow up. And you've got a team. Every NFL team has a bunch of grown men on it that are married with kids, right? Like Cam Jordan has, I think, 5 kids. He's married. I think they have 5 kids, but that he's an adult man. He's a grown man. And if you look at a quarterback with maturity issues and think guys like him and Demario Davis are going to mesh with that, no shot. So Saints fans just fell in love with Shador Sanders as if he was going to be the hero when he's not that good anyway. And so he's not like a day one starter that's going to change your team. And also he needs to grow up a lot. And now they're mad that Kellen Moore drafts a guy that's going to be 26. And I know that you don't necessarily want old quarterbacks, but you have a mature guy with better physical tools and suddenly blow it all up. We suck, whatever. I can't stand it. Like, you hired Kellen Moore to run your offense and draft a quarterback. He's going to run your offense and he drafted a quarterback, and without even seeing the guy take a snap. And all these people that are melting down about Shuck have never watched him play before. That's the funniest part about all this, by the way. You've got people that have these big platforms that were melting down about the Giants picking Dart over Sanders that have never watched Jackson Dart play football. Never. Mel Kiper used the Georgia game this year as a knock against Dart. That tells me all I need to know. So I don't hate it. I don't love it. I don't hate it. And I think that Saints fans melting down about him are insane. Do you think Kellen Moore knows what he's doing or not? Mickey's not drafting a quarterback that Kellen Moore doesn't tell him to draft. Okay. So I don't know. I don't understand at all the Gabriel pick. That was weird for Cleveland taking both of them. I don't understand it with the quarterback room that they already have, but that's Cleveland. Ewer should have stayed in school in hindsight. He would have gotten a lot more money, but next year's draft class is loaded. But imagine Quinn Ewers in the portal. What do you think Georgia would have paid him to go play at Georgia? I mean, come on. What do you think Ohio State would have paid him to come back? So, anyway. What team did I think lost the draft the most? The Browns are definitely a candidate. They are. I did like the trade that they made, though. Jacksonville traded up and got their guy with Travis Hunter, but they did give up a rather significant haul, more so than what the expected return is for a pick like that. I mean, it's probably Cleveland. I don't know why you would take two quarterbacks with the room that you had, but Steelers and the Saints really confused you. The Saints just had a need at everything. The Steelers not going quarterback was odd. Especially early, you know, but the Saints just have needs everywhere. I mean, they had a need at safety. They had a need on the offensive line. They got the Kansas running back as UDFA. We'll see. And it's just when you're a team that has issues everywhere, you know, you just kind of pick best available. The Stutzman pick, I think, is great. I'm thrilled about that one. That's my favorite pick of the draft is Stutzman. So, Mel Kiper completely embarrassed himself at this draft. What a crap show he put on. He even started to piss off the other guys on the desk, like Ryan Clark and Reese Davis. So the biggest loser in the draft was not Shedeur Sanders. It was Mel Kiper. It's one thing to be wrong, right? Everybody gets things wrong all the time. I'm wrong all the time. Everybody that does sports opinion is wrong. Every draft analyst gets things wrong. All of them do. So it's one thing to get something wrong. And then it's another thing to get something wrong and be upset about it for a little while. I don't like being wrong. It sucks. It's another thing to get something wrong and then spend 3 days absolutely losing your mind over the same thing over and over again. And every pick, it's like Cam Ward's moment was ruined by ESPN. They just cast him off aside, like a number one overall pick, zero-star recruit turned into number one overall pick and just pushed that aside. Doesn't matter because Shedeur. Jackson Dart's moment got ruined because Shedeur. Saints pick Shuck at 40 and he melts down. I mean, just that was, to me, I think that was an indication of a guy losing his grip. Because he was the OG, right? He was the draft guy. Mel Kiper was the draft guy. Now ESPN has multiple draft guys that are better at it than he is. And I'm sure he sees that. And now there are better draft guys all over the place than him. So I don't know if it was just kind of melting down because he was wrong and now he's losing his grip, like on the industry itself. the fact that he had the audacity to sit on that desk and say that it's the NFL that has been getting quarterbacks wrong for 50 years, when you can just go back and look at every year where he's talked about quarterbacks, where he's gotten something wrong. It was wild. And I mean, if I'm ESPN, maybe they just put him on there because meltdowns, people are talking about him because he had meltdowns. And so that's good. As long as people are talking, just like Stephen A. Smith is going to do his thing tomorrow, and it's going to be embarrassing. And that kind of commentary has no loyal audience. And so people will clip it and put it on Twitter, and maybe that makes ESPN happy, but I wouldn't put Mel on the desk anymore. I wouldn't do it. I really wouldn't. That was embarrassing. For 3 days, that was embarrassing. You had your draft analyst pitching a hissy fit to the point where it was ruining the commentary about other draft picks. So, anyway. Shifting to baseball, is arguably the best week they had overall since maybe the national title beat State and Pearl, then punk Vandy on Friday and Saturday. It was a very good week until today. Goodness gracious. Today looked like Vandy jumped on Nichols early and desperately wanted to salvage today and onto the terrible lump, and Bianco getting tossed, it seemed like a lost cause fest. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, you mentioned this. I forgot to bring this up. So again, like today, just kind of being a what the hell moment, Judd Uttermark was benched for violating team rules, got in trouble. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not going to speculate, but my first thought was, what did he do? Did he spend too much time out on the square last night? What was he doing? Start to the Giants. One thing that concerns me is head coach uncertain future. That's the only thing that can derail this. I'm a little concerned about that, but I do think the Giants are kind of bought in on Daboll now, especially since they, you know, they drafted their quarterback of the future. At least they, you know, you think. And I think with Wilson, they're going to win enough games to keep him around. I do. It's a good young team. 12-9 now. Baseball, they have Oklahoma State and Auburn left. It's definitely doable to get to 16 to 17 wins, no doubt. I mean, 5-4 over the next 9 games to get to 17 wins? Absolutely. Absolutely, they can get there. They just got to go do it. They just got to go do it. What do I think of the other series around the conference? To be honest with you, I didn't watch much. I didn't watch much baseball because of the draft this weekend. But Florida took 2 of 3 from Arkansas. That was a big series win for Florida? I mean, do they have a chance to play themselves back in, right? They beat State. Now they beat Arkansas. That LSU series was impressive. Pretty intense for sure. Texas Little Brothers A&M yet again. Yeah, that is, I mean, A&M needed a win, right? They needed a win over Texas, and they're just not going to get it. It is to the point where I kind of feel bad for them. I mean, just imagine being alpha'd the way that they got alpha'd by Texas since they joined the SEC. It is brutal for them. Really liking how the way the baseball team has been performing. Just feel like we have missed some big opportunities this season, today being one of them. Yes, that is the 10. I mean, game 3, Tennessee, game 3, Arkansas. Those are two, right? I mean, if they just don't lose to Little Rock in the midweek, for example, there has been some of that, no doubt. 2, 3, 4, 6, and 9 all lost their series this weekend. Big upset weekend in baseball. Hope Ole Miss moves up in the polls. They will absolutely move up. No doubt. Only 2 games out of being tied for second. They're 5th right now in the standings. Yeah. In New York, they love to hate. It is a tough media market. It is a tough media market. But, I mean, luckily for Jackson, he's got Eli, like, in his corner, right? There is a rapport there. And so you think that they're going to have some conversations, if they haven't already had them, about what to expect and how to handle it and stuff like that. Because if people think criticism for a college quarterback is bad, just wait till you throw 3 interceptions in the first half in an NFL game. You know, Judkins' mom answering the call for him was very on brand. No kidding. Vandy was the first team to get some run on Mason Morris, but I don't think that's very alarming or anything. They're a very good team. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But that, yeah, that was, you know, all the clamoring that I participated in, hand up, just for him to have, you know, not a perfect weekend was, I don't know if funny's the word that you guys will appreciate, but it did kind of crack me up that, you know, spent all this time talking about Morris being their best pitcher and then he has a bad weekend. But pleased with the Titans and the Rams draft, Tennessee playing for 2027 with the new stadium and all that. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad. I know that you are a Titans fan, so I'm glad that you're satisfied with what they've done. I think Cam Ward is going to grow on a lot of people. I know Titans fans are excited about their quarterback, but I think nationally people are just kind of, again, just kind of dismissive of him. Just, oh, yeah, well, the Titans picked Cam Ward. I've been impressed with a lot of what I've read lately about him. Shedeur Sanders has actual on-field concerns, too. It's not just off the field. He has bricks for feet, takes way too many sacks, and never sets his feet. Half his highlights are Hunter Circus catches. Over half of his completions were at the line of scrimmage. So, oh my gosh, look at that completion percentage. Yeah, because he's dumping the ball off. Yeah, there are serious concerns. Bad pocket presence. I mean, he was the smart NFL people, the ones that actually talk to NFL teams and that actually like paid attention to that have been telling you for months, hey, teams have a second round grade on this guy. Him falling out of the first round should not have surprised a single person. To the fifth, different story. But falling out of the first shouldn't have surprised anybody. But because you have a bunch of idiots, no. They're not idiots. I think they're smart. I think they do it intentionally. But you have a bunch of people on ESPN or wherever just hyping this dude up. People start believing that he is something that he wasn't. You got Rams season tickets. Don't sleep on that team because it's loaded. That's where I wanted Jackson to go. You were told Judd stayed out last night and missed the morning team meeting. Oh, the old double-decker hangover. What an idiot. If that's true. But it's also very college. Don't understand why Colorado and Shedeur are such media darlings. It's a very simple answer, Dion. Because the people that now are in charge of the media, right? The talking heads love primetime. That's why. It's as simple as that. Meanwhile, Dart put on an absolute clinic on what a quarterback leader should be. Night and day difference, absolutely. Vandy's better than they played this weekend. Our starters are having early inning breakdowns. Hope to see the Rebs in Birmingham. What if they had early inning breakdowns because the Ole Miss offense is good? Just picking on you. Glad you're here, man. This next year road series are going to be interesting. Oklahoma probably won't have much juice in their park, but they're good. Yeah, I think they broke a stadium record a couple weeks ago with 5,000, just over 5,000. So thought Hunter Elliott was good despite his command issues. Definitely a positive step forward. Much better, for sure. Battled through it, but that's still just – it's kind of a consistent thing with him this year is he is struggling with his command. So skipping practices to go to fashion shows, trashing your teammates, blowing off interviews. Forgot about the fashion show thing too. Everybody else is practicing, but he skips to go to a fashion show, and people are like, oh, yeah, no big deal, whatever. No, man. What purpose does the wall behind the outfield wall serve? It's called the batter's eye. And so what that does, it provides a solid backdrop so batters can see the ball. If you had white or like not a solid color or it wasn't dark behind the pitcher, it would be hard for the batter to pick up the ball. They wouldn't be able to see it. Batter's eye. Hence why they call it batter's eye. But yeah, that's all it is. It's to give a solid backdrop for the batter to be able to see the ball and the umpire and the catcher to be able to see the ball. Because if you had like a white out there and they had to make it so tall because they cleared all those trees out for the band field. So they had to make it even taller. because now it became like kind of like a white space up there too. So they had to extend the height, but that's all it's there for, is just simply so the batter, the catcher, the umpire can see the ball out of the pitcher's hand. Do I think Lemonis could save his job by beating Ole Miss and getting to 12 to 13 SEC wins? If he makes the tournament, I bet he saves his job. I think it's that simple. So, there you go. Also, you asked about the prank call thing, which, by the way, how many people ran with Ole Miss fraternity students? It's amazing, right? That anyway, wasn't an Ole Miss fraternity student. It was a Berry College football player whose dad's the defense coordinator for the Falcons or whatever. But it's being incredibly overblown, to be honest with you. I mean, people are going to start calling for this dude's arrest here in a little bit. It's a prank phone call. Is it dumb? Yeah. Was it harmful? Yeah. I mean, it was a very stupid thing to do. And the fact that a coach had a situation in which his son was able to get the phone numbers, because there were multiple prank calls. It wasn't just Shador, by the way. You wouldn't know that, but it's dumb all around, right? Kids dumb for doing it. They're definitely dumb for filming it and posting it online. I mean, imagine being that stupid. But it's a prank call. I mean, you got a bunch of people, a bunch of sports media people. Oh, just an awful situation. Oh, shut up. It's a prank call. Give me a break. Especially when you're talking about Sanders, who is already a millionaire football player. Oh, he got a prank call. Boo-hoo. How about the UDFA that got a call? A guy that didn't get drafted, that got a call saying, hey, we're trading up. We're taking you here. Guy didn't get drafted. That's worse than any, whatever. Shouldn't have done it. Very stupid. But my goodness. Like, he didn't kill his puppy. It was a prank call, okay? Well, let's just ease the hyperbole a little bit, people. Act like these people didn't prank call when they were in high school. Give me a break. We went to E-Bomb's World and found the soundboards for, like, Al Pacino and would call people all the time. All the time. But anyway, kids will be kids. College kids are dumb. It's just not something that people need to melt down over. But we melt down over everything anymore. So, anyway. Appreciate you guys. We'll be back on Tuesday. And I'll see you then.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.